This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Doctor in the House series. It's a Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with me.
Good afternoon, Mira. Yeah. I hardly can recognize you now.
Why?
Miss you for 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Oh, you know, enjoying life, obviously.
I'm not excited about this show, you can tell.
I am, because
it doesn't affect you.
Well, that's what you think. Menopause doesn't affect men. But obviously we do.
You know, they say there are two things.
Did I give away something?
Two things right. Certain in life. Okay. Death, taxes for you, and menopause for the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
Just that the men don't admit that it happens.
Right. Mm. Okay. Right. Well, that's the reason why we have the very gorgeous Dr. Helena.
I know. Helena Lynn.
That's
thank
right.
You, thank okay. you.
Fresh out of Africa.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
You know, her Instagram feed for the last, 2 weeks has been nothing but Masai Mara. And
yeah,
you know,
it was like a dream.
The wildlife. And I'm like, what? And, you know, she goes on a safari and she looks perfect.
Immaculate.
For all the photographs.
There's something core, you know, the beauty app, you know, you can change the way you look too.
Oh, right. Did you perspire at all?
I did. Trust me.
You know, your Instagram is going to be swamped of people just looking at you. How gorgeous
I think she travelled with, her makeup artist. Yeah.
Entourage.
And photographer.
And I'm following the good example of Dr. George.
That's right.
Damn it, you look good.
That's just shameless, right?
But you know, this topic is like, it hit home in a big way, right, Dr. Yeah. Helena?
Yes, that's right.
I think we're both...
I'm getting
boat.
There. I'm getting there. Yeah.
That's not soon. True. Both of you are like way before 40s, right?
Oh, go away, George.
All right, go away.
Yeah. I would like to believe so.
Okay, right.
The reality is. Menopause is around the corner for many of us.
Yeah. Indeed.
But when I read this article, which the producers sort of picked up and decided to, for us to have this conversation today, I thought to myself, damn, this research is just coming out now?
Mm-hmm.
I should have known in my 20s because I would have done something about it.
Tell us about this research.
And it is... IVF specialists in Britain have now proposed a new procedure that they say can delay menopause for up to 20 years. So when I read the headline, I was like, really? What can I do? Then I found out, not really, I've missed the boat. Dr. Helena, tell us a little bit more about this research.
No, it's not something very... in fact, if true enough, somebody rang me and it was a doctor friend who rang me just a couple of days ago and said, did you read the news about this? And can I come here to get my ovary
treatment.
Tissue preserve so that I can delay my menopause? And I say, I have not heard anything about it, sorry. But yet, when I actually open up the link, then I started to realize that, hey, it's not something new here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what basically came out is a group of scientists, or I would say a centre in the UK, actually is now offering a treatment which is actually being commercialised. It is what we call ovarian tissue freezing or cryopreservation. So basically, it offers younger women to go into the clinic to have a daycare surgery, which is a keyhole surgery to actually take out chunks of the ovarian tissue and send it into the freezer for XYZ number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they become menopause, they come back to the clinic and have the
and reclaim their fountain of youth.
Yes, reclaim the fountain of youth and re-implant back.
You know, this is a part where we excite the whole Klang Valley listeners to say, is that real? You know, and then first of all, obviously, is this a kind of like an urban myth or is this scientifically possible? And secondly, I think that will create a lot of ethical conversation, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Mira, what do you think? Is that even, I mean, we're talking about playing God and pushing the boundary.
I don't care, George.
You don't care. You just want your fountain of youth.
Think about it. The pill liberated the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Then came IVF.
Yeah, exactly.
So what? Take out some of my ovarian tissue and freeze it.
This is the part where we're going to get a lot of conversation, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure I'll get a few phone calls soon. Yeah,
but you know, I was looking at why or sort of the applications. I mean, it's just not bringing back your fountain of youth, George. I mean, there's so many downside to menopause, which some women have it really bad. What are some of those menopausal issues, Dr. Helena, that, you know, some women could do without?
Yeah, I think it's actually, you know, it's also, you know, physically and psychologically. So, I mean, when you have menopause, you will actually experience things like hot flushes, you get depressed, mm-hmm. you don't have your menses, you get a bit dry down below. Your waterworks sometimes become problematic. That's when you have to go and see George. Yeah, and then you know the whole battery of problem. And psychologically, as women, you actually grieve for the loss of your youth as well, because you know that your fertility is gone, and you know that your skin become loose, and then you have wrinkles and so forth. So it is psychological as well to many expected. You know, mm-hmm. you are losing your youth as well. So it is a combination of, you know, your physical...
Well, that begs the question, right? Yeah. What you describe are, in some way, some people call it inconvenience, some way people call it nuisance, mm-hmm. you know, all the hot flushes. And can you highlight some real medical problems, such as osteoporosis, yeah. that women go through after menopause?
Yes. We know that if you hit menopause, your risk of getting a heart disease actually goes up.
Uh-huh.
Before that, because you have your estrogen is actually protective against heart disease.
Okay.
So women don't die of a heart disease before menopause because they are actually relatively risk-free to a certain extent.
Is that really risk-free or just protected to a certain extent?
Protected to many extent. Okay. So relatively, you would say that you are risk-free. But after menopause, then the risk become as of men. So therefore, your chances of getting a heart disease actually increase dramatically once you reach menopause.
Right.
Now, okay. there are also risks of things like, hip fractures because of osteoporosis,
uh-huh.
cancers and so as well. So in many ways, our female hormones are actually protective against certain diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also, of course, it makes us feel happy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay. I mean, obviously... many people will say, why go to the extent of freezing a piece or chunk of your ovaries and then later on reuse it? Because there is that benefit of HRT, right?
Yeah.
Can HRT do everything this technology promises?
Well, unfortunately, we would like to believe so. And that if you ask me the same question about 20 years ago or 15 years ago, I would say yes. However, I'm sure that you are mostly aware of this study called Women Health Initiative, which was published in 2005, whereby they actually examined close to 30,000 women who were on HRT.
In the West.
And they found a lot of horrible outcome. And therefore, the study had to be stopped prematurely. Now, what did they find? They found that if you are actually on HRT for more than 5 to 7 years, you are actually at high risk of having a heart disease, high risk of breast cancer, high risk of stroke, but then you reduce the risk of hip fractures and colorectal cancer. So overnight, all women actually stopped the HRT overnight, and you can see the share price of this HRT producing manufacturing company. Their share price just dropped dramatically, and overnight, you know, HRT producing plants were shut overnight, and so forth. So, but there are criticism when it comes to this study, because they find that there are many conflicting data there, because there are two arms to this study, because there was one arm whereby there are women who have uterus, so you are actually being offered estrogen and progesterone because you need the progesterone to protect the uterus against unopposed estrogen. There's another group of women who had their uterus taken out already, so they were actually put on estrogen only. So they find that certain things such as heart disease and breast cancer and it did not increase in these women who are taking estrogen only. Whereas you have found that there's actually increased risk for women who are taking estrogen and progesterone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now the question is, which is the culprit? Is it the estrogen?
Where do you go from here?
Yeah, right.
That is a fantastic point to stop, because when you look at Mira's face, if we had this kind of Facebook Live, then Mira on one hand was kind of banking on that fountain of youth of HRT that solved the problem. When she heard all these conflicting information, you could see her eyes just rolling because of confusion. So Mira, first of all, after what you heard from what Dr. Helena said, so what's your view about HRT? And if you were to undergo that, how would you accept it or would you not?
Well, I do agree. Based on that study, there was a lot of pushback many, many years ago. And a lot of people, even in this side of the world, decided to go off HRT because of that fear. So my question was, you know, that was done in a cohort of people who aren't Asians, whether or not Asian women would have reacted the same way towards
Great
HRT,
question.
Right? I wasn't really
good
sure
point.
Whether that was applicable to women from this side of the world. Two, I also know that, you know, every woman is different. I mean, how we go through menopause differs from one woman to the other. For one woman, it's absolutely nothing. She just sails through it. Some women will tell you, I thought, you know, menopause was a transition, but it's turning out to be an event on its own, you know.
Crisis.
Yeah.
It is.
So it can range. And in my own family, I've seen my aunts, my mom, all went through a pretty hard time during menopause, which has got me really afraid, to be honest. I mean, I'm 3 years away from it, two and a half to be exact.
How did you know?
The 50 threshold.
Okay. Is that true? By the way, on that point, is 50-year-old the kind of like a common age for the cessations?
It's a bit later than that.
No, it's about 51 on average.
On average, but Asian ladies.
Asian ladies. But it is actually you know, some women don't go into menopause until 56, for example, because there is a whole range of things. It's a spectrum.
What determines when you go into menopause?
Well, it depends also on your individuals, whether you genetically... Let's say if your family, you have a family history of early menopause, so you do have the tendency to go into menopause earlier than 50.
Would fitness or state of health determine the onset of menopause?
Yes. I would also point that out. If you smoke and drink, of course, you may go into menopause earlier. And there's a lot of epigenetic studies and theories surrounding menopause as well. Because what your mother eat during pregnancy, when she's pregnant with you, also has an effect and implication.
See, you can always blame the mother.
We can blame everybody. Yeah,
you know, poor mom. Now we don't want to go.
Responsibility. Yeah. So there are multiple factors. And for example, if you have endometriosis, for example, or you have a surgery before, or you had chemotherapy or radiotherapy, or autoimmune disease before, then these are the factors that push you into early menopause compared to the general populations.
We also see younger girls going into menarche much earlier today.
Yes.
Do you see more women going into menopause earlier?
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, when I sit in my clinic and, you know, dealing with fertility. And now you are seeing more and more women coming here with very low number of egg reserve. And nowadays, there is actually a test that you can do. It's called anti-Müllerian hormone test to see what is your reserve is like. It is like knowing how much oil, oil reserve has. So we can see that more and more women are actually having low reserve compared to perhaps XYZ number of years. Mm-hmm. And we really don't know whether there is an environment factors that causes it. Because we know for sure, I mean, George can tell you for sure that men's sperm number and quality are deteriorating. But whatever is causing sperm and... Mira, you're looking at me like...
George will just tell you, it's the environment.
It's the environment.
Or blame the parents.
But,
that's
but
right.
Certainly whatever is affecting the sperm...
That's right.
...is also equally affecting women.
It's all very idiopathic because, you know, when you just look at all those data of donors ranging from the 50s to 2019, you just see that the ejaculated amount of healthy, active sperms are just declining, and nobody can explain that.
Yeah. So coming back to the question that you asked me, I think I'll just wait and see to see how I'm actually going to react to this.
Well, I've got two questions I want to ask you, right?
Okay. Again?
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Helena pointed out there are that part of that transition period that people get a hard time. For example, those discomfort, the mood, and then the change. The second part is the threat of potential life-threatening and serious medical consequences. Would someone make a decision based on those short-term change, easing into the change, or making a decision for long-term? In your basis, when it comes to your time to make that decision, which one would you be considering more important?
The heart disease and the osteoporosis would be of most concern, because the others would go off after a while, doesn't it, Dr. Helena?
And that
no,
leads
you
to...
mean you mean it? That's not true. That's not
I have women or my aunts who rang me at, you know, 1 a.m. in the morning and say, I can't sleep. I just stopped my HRD and I feel depressed. I feel that, you know, the world is crashing down on me. And suddenly, and well, 1 a.m., you just tell her, auntie, just take your HRT and go back to sleep. Mm. Okay, and that's the end of it. And she felt happy.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, you know, post-menopause, all of that goes away?
Well, it takes time for some people. It doesn't just go away just like that. It takes a lot of, I would say, a lot of effort to constantly remind yourself that this will go away. This, you know, these hot flashes, you know, the dryness and all these things. And actually, like you pointed out, it varies from one person to another. Some people just sail through that and say that, well, nothing happens. I'm happy because I don't have period. I don't have to worry about, you know, taking tampons or pads everywhere. I can swim every day, for example. Mm-hmm. No, to another extent, extreme, whereby people say, oh, no, the world is crashing down on me.
Yeah. Okay.
So really... I would say it's very variable for one person to another to how they make decision on whether they want to take HRT or not.
You know, you spoke about ethically, whether this is right or not. We'll come back after this, George, and talk about how life has changed today. We're all living longer. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Does ethics still come to play in this? I don't think we expected to live this long.
Wow, that's very provocative.
We are busy fighting mortality on a daily basis. So we'll come back and have that discussion. If you have a question for us, give us a call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me. And joining us, the beautiful Dr. Helena Lim, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. We are discussing, you know, ways in which we can sort of delay menopause, perhaps. There were some studies that just came out. Let me just quickly summarize what that study was. What surgeons have done is they remove a slice of a healthy ovary from a woman in her 20s or 30s. Yep. So if you're out of that age gap, probably not. What they do is they freeze it, they re-implant it when you reach your natural menopause. And if the graft takes, it should behave like a much younger ovary and continue to produce hormones, perhaps even eggs to some extent, right? Mm. And it delays menopause for up to 20 years or sometimes even more. But so far, only 9 women have undergone this procedure, 9 or 11, I think.
Yeah, for the menopause part. But this is actually not a very new procedure because in the past, in the world of IVF and fertility preservation, we've done it quite well for some of the women. So these are the women who have gone through, for example, they were diagnosed of having cancers when they were young. For example, they were in their teenage and so forth. So what happens that these are the options that we can offer to women at this age to preserve their fertility?
Because you're preserving the eggs rather than preserving the chunk of the ovary. Is that correct?
Ovarian tissue. There is actually
being offered. So it's being done already?
Already for some time. So there are, if I'm not wrong, but there are a few hundreds of live birth from this re-implanted tissue produce the eggs and then get... These women actually went on to have babies after which.
So would it be good to watch these ladies and when they hit menopause?
Yeah, that would be interesting, but I would suspect that they will hit menopause a bit earlier than their counterpart because for the fact that they had surgery and for the fact that they have chemo or radiotherapy for their cancer, for example.
Okay. When I read this article, I think two things came across my mind, which I thought perhaps... a dialogue with the general, the listeners out there will be great. First of all, this study was done by a fertility expert, so they probably have in mind of preserving the fertility.
Right.
So previously, when we look at in the States, especially in California, when there are many movement for delaying childbirth until later on, then there are many companies offering younger ladies to freeze their eggs.
That's right. Yep.
So that later on they can preserve their fertility to later on. That's already, to me, is pushing the envelopes a little bit. However, obviously, the world is changing, like what Mira is saying. But now, the act of preserving a part of your ovarian or your gonads, and then later on, taking that fertility to later on the stage. So my question is that how later on, because in the future, if this technology really works, you'll be having somebody who is physically in their 50s or 60s yep. carry on bearing children.
Yeah.
So is that pushing the envelope a bit too far, which will be a really nice discussion to talk about ethics. Yep. And the other thing is that at the moment, there's a huge movement on anti-aging.
And that, I was just going to come to that.
That's right. Okay. So if that means if one is not interested in preserving their fertility, but I want to preserve my age, I will preserve a piece of my ovarian tissues. And then when it comes to a certain part of my life, I just don't want to grow old and I continue to preserve my age.
George, how different is that from all the plastic surgeons and the cosmetic surgeries that people go through today?
Well, exactly. This is a conversation
it's
we need to have.
It's not different.
Well, because you make it sound very tempting for me now. I'm going to preserve my ovaries now.
Mira, the thing is that out there, I'm sure many people will join the conversation, is that when you talk about physically altering somebody's look is one thing, but there are stem cells technologies. There are all sorts of anti-aging lotion and not just lotion and potions, like medication in order to reverse that aging process. And that's when everybody's pushing the envelopes. And where do we stop?
Well, Helena.
I don't think that will ever stop. Have you seen the industry and how much it's worth? The whole anti-aging industry.
Yeah.
Do you see anyone doing anything
aesthetic
to stop it or halt it in any way whatsoever, George?
Yeah.
Stem cells haven't really been proven, but they're out there. People believe it.
Mm-hmm.
In certain areas only. For blood, perhaps.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And for your knee, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Has it been proven anywhere else?
No.
But we're still buying it.
That's right.
But don't you think this is a bit more of a controlled condition?
It is a very controlled condition. Therefore, if it's controlled at this stage, and I think, you know, in the UK, there is a regulatory authority, the Human Fertilizations and Embryo Authorities actually would step in. I'm a little bit surprised that there's no comment being made about preservation of because it's been tried on 9 or 11 patients.
Yeah, but they haven't re-implanted back, I don't think so. They have just taken it out. They have not re-implanted back. Whether after, you know, re-implantation, whether the graft will take or not, we do not know. Because
exactly.
Whether it will work or not.
It will not. Because it needs a revascularization in order to take on the preserved tissue and whether you become alive or not. That's one thing. Number two, then we have to talk about the long-term risk. We really don't know whether if you were to start off your menses again, your hormones again, whether in the long run, whether it increases your risk of having a breast cancer, having an increased risk of having your uterine cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Because in nature, by 51, you should be stopped. You should stop having your estrogen. You should stop having your progesterone. And whether if you actually prolong the exposure, whether it's an external source or your internal source, whether that will increase your risk significantly. Nobody knows, actually.
Yeah. But it's tempting.
It is tempting.
It is. I mean, and
I want to look younger.
You already look young, Dr. Helena.
You want to preserve that young youth for the next 50 years.
I don't want my fountain of youth.
That's right.
Well, we are playing God already without us realizing it, isn't it? And the reason I'm going to tell you is this. Dr. Sherman Slibber, he's an American surgeon who was involved in ovarian transplants, and he told a conference in Turkey, and this is July 2012, not now, yeah, that a woman born today has a 50% chance of living to 100.
Wow.
Would you agree?
Well, I want to live to 250. Mira knows that.
Yeah. I don't want to.
But no, George can.
Let's just say he's right, right? That a woman born today has a 50% chance of living up to 100. And that means she's going to be spending half of her life post-menopause.
Uh-huh. Mm. True.
But you could have grafts removed as a young woman and then have that first replace as you approach menopausal age.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could then put a slice back every decade. See, I've gone to town with my research with this because I want all the hope in the world.
Well, theoretically we can do that. But, you know, in the long run, like I said, whether this plan works or not, it depends on whether, you know, whether the graft ticks or not, whether it functions properly after you re-implant the ovary.
So when you do it for fertility,
yes,
that's successful?
Well, the success actually varies from one case to another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it also depends on what age that you preserve the ovarian tissue and where do you re-implant the ovarian tissue. Now, what happens is that for some centres, they actually try to re-implant back to the ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's no good blood supply, you have to actually consider elsewhere, for example, armpit or peritoneum for that matter.
Right.
So
How does ovarian tissue in your armpit relate to eggs?
Because what happens is that you have to have a good vessels to actually vascularize the tissue that you implant back and make it function to start the engine going. So if you put it in an armpit, of course the eggs won't reach your fallopian tube, but that is more for your hormonal changes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly you can actually potentially extract the eggs from there.
Well, I mean, your esteemed colleague, Dr. Prashant, has been on the show talking about fertility all the time. And we previously had a discussion about all these stories about women pregnant, a child was born with a woman who's like 60 years old, 57 years old, that sort of like headline-grabbing situation, right? Okay. And he said, at the end of the day, it's all about hormonal input to get the engine going, just to put it bluntly.
Yes.
And I think one of the failures about HRT is that HRT, in a way, is an exogenous supply of hormone.
Right.
We can never get that fine balance between progesterone and estrogen to the extent that nature intended. Besides, just like HRT in men as well, by a simple thought of injection of testosterone into men somehow can reverse andropause, it's a ludicrous thinking. It's because hormone such as sex hormone for estrogen, progesterone, and also testosterone, they have this circle, circadian cycle, they are bound to protein, so it's extremely complex. But when you get a situation where you get a natural, your own ovary preserved and implanted into yourself, surely that is going to work. That is the answer to HRT. I really think 10 years from today, we'll look at that technology. That is a new era of anti-aging and a new era of the fertility preservation.
That's fertility.
Yes and no. Like I said, you know, it sounds very good. It sounds like, wow, it's a dream come true. But, you know, we don't really know. We really don't know for the 9 patients or for the 200 or 300 patients that we have done before, whether, you know, how long you're going to actually extend their youth, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like HRT,
you really don't know.
It depends on the individual.
Individual as well. And in the long run, what will happen to them? Like I say, the risk of breast cancer, for example, uterine cancer, really don't know. We have no data whatsoever.
Yeah, but in the era of when HRT was first introduced, we didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then so there are trials after trials. And then we're stepping into an era, the first test tube baby is more than 40 years old, right?
Yes, 41.
41 that's, years
yes,
old.
So this year.
And then it's obviously, you know, venturing into the new era of IVF and, you know, artificial reproductive technology. And I think this, to me, just sounds like a more natural way of preserving fertility for the future.
Yeah, but even HRT, I mean, there was all that brouhaha in the past. Now it seems to be okay and, you know, it's back. People sort of
it's just like cholesterol
it.
Story, isn't it?
Yeah.
So whether you take butter or margarine as well, yeah, I take butter.
So how do you advise your patient when they come to you about HRT, the pros, the cons, and should I and should I not?
Well, the thing is, it's hard because obviously you have one big, you know, data that tells you that, look, it may be harmful for you. You may die of HRT rather than anything else. Well, the thing is, like I said, because the studies has a lot of flaws, and it's almost impossible for us to revise that study anymore because it's deemed not ethical anymore to subject women to randomization for HRT and non-HRT and to relook the study. Like I say, it may be caused by the progesterone. We really don't know because the data seems to suggest to us that estrogen may not be the culprit. It may be the progesterone. Now, can we change the progesterone or do it in another method? For example, if you have your uterus, you can put in a Mirena and give women the continuous estrogen without having any oral progesterone. So maybe that works better, or you have the benefit of having estrogen without the side effect or the the other risks of such as heart disease and breast cancer, for example. Mm.
So for the listeners out there who are already on HRT, are benefiting from the symptom relief of HRT, what advice would you give them?
I would say that we may have to revise and relook into the need for the HRT after 5 years, because the data seems to suggest that after you take it for more than 5 years, the risk started to increase significantly. So I think if after 5 years, you may want to consider gradually, you know, lower down your dosage and see whether you can switch off HRT or not. Mm.
For those women out there who just started the onset of menopause and are having a bit of a hard time with their symptoms, what advice would you give them then?
I would say that, okay, if you really can't take it, you're really finding it, you know, it disrupts your life, you can't work, you can't function properly, it makes you depressed, why don't you just try HRT for a while?
Mm-hmm. See if it helps.
See whether it helps.
Have you ever wondered, Dr. Helena, what our grandmothers went through? I mean, I really wish she was alive today, because, you know, I know so much more to actually ask her these questions. They sort of, if they did go through some sort of discomfort, they probably never spoke about it. But, you know, they didn't make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, I think the women in those days are probably a bit more hardy than we are.
Really?
Really don't know.
George?
I really don't know.
Say something.
I really don't know, to
I'm
be honest.
I'm a softie, sir.
I'm not talking about you.
Well, probably they have 10 children to feed. And,
well, that's
and
true.
Probably so they preoccupied.
Based on,
so they
based
had
on
no
those
time.
Statistics, right? Yeah. Okay. I mean, you know, like my grandmother had 12 children, and then based on those statistics, and then, you know, all these issues about whether urinary incontinence after 3 children is problematic, mm-hmm. and then childbirth, you know, through those times. It's you're right. On that basis, they're tougher individuals.
What about
at
your
time.
Mom?
My mom had 5 pregnancies and 4 children, and she's a tough, tough woman. And I think awareness is part of this, mm-hmm, because I guess I think in her era when nobody really
talks
about issues like that, you just assume this is part of aging and you have to get on with it. And I guess when you have more knowledge and have more discussion, and then you can improve quality of life. Because mm-hmm. after I became a doctor and I started asking her about certain issues and realized that she was really having a little bit of a hard time with urinary incontinence and everything, and all these problems disappeared after hysterectomy.
Right. And
So, you know, I guess many older women perhaps would suffer in silence.
Yeah, they don't talk about it.
You know, I spoke to one I think he was a gynecologist. I hope he was, because we spoke about the role of the uterus. Uh-huh. And he ever so bluntly just said to me, when I asked him, I said, if you say the uterus is only there just for us to have babies and all of us are just having one child, 2 children,
just
what is it there for now?
Take it out.
You know what he said?
Yeah. What do you say?
It's there waiting for cancer to happen.
Oh, gosh.
I said, no, you didn't see that. And he said, yes, that's exactly it. But we have a connection with our uterus.
Absolutely.
And we're so reluctant, even with people who have issues with it. They don't want to part with it. But
it is a symbolism of your femininity. It's a symbolism of your fertility. To a certain extent, that I think it is psychological to many extent.
Really?
Yeah.
Even
absolutely.
When it's being a problem?
Yeah, to many extent.
Okay. Maybe I haven't come to that.
How do you feel about that? You know, that does that scare you with that statement?
I think understanding the role, mm-hmm. and what would happen. You see, a lot of people also have this misconception about the role of the uterus and the role of the ovary.
Correct.
So they assume that by removing the uterus, you're going to have hormonal imbalances, your sex drive is going to be affected and all of that. But that's actually the ovary.
Yeah, that's right.
Not the uterus. So I think there's also this people not understanding the role of the uterus and what really happens mm-hmm. when you actually remove it. If it's going to be a problem for me, I'll be happy to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Sure. If it doesn't have, you know, terribly other sort of side effects as a result. Am I oversimplifying this, Dr. Helena?
Yeah, I think yes and no, but, you know.
Thank you. Please tell me.
Yeah, when you remove the uterus, you remove part of cervix as well. And some people would say that Yeah, certainly, you know, the sex drive or, you know, it's not so pleasant during sexual intercourse. Once, and also depends on how extensive your uterus removal is like. And sometimes it may cause a bit of a prolapse. So it's not so simple as, you know, removing everything and then your life goes back to normal. Actually, it's not. It does come with its complications and
thanks,
its discomfort in its own right.
Thank you very much for that.
So she's just been convinced to keep her uterus then to go for HRT.
Yeah, yeah.
He got me at it's just waiting for cancer to come.
I'm going to put in a marina for you, don't worry.
No.
Then you're good for 5 years.
Coming back after the market update, we'll continue the discussion on how we can prolong or delay menopause on the big picture. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. It is our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me. Also with us, Dr. Helena Lim, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. We're discussing how to delay menopause. I'm desperate. I need to have some answers. So some research has been done where 9 women in the UK have so far removed and frozen their ovarian tissue. They've undergone keyhole surgery to remove small pieces of these ovarian tissue, which later will be sliced up and frozen to preserve it. And it's called cryopreservation. We do that for men's health cryotherapy what again?
Cryotherapy, it's done for many, many things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes can destroy tissues, sometimes can preserve tissues. And preservation is usually for gametes, for sperms and for ovaries.
That's right. Okay. So this ovarian tissue is then thawed out and then re-implanted, depends where, in the fallopian tube, they say, next to the fallopian tubes, which pick up the mature eggs that are released by the tissue. Now, how much this new procedure will delay menopause depends on your age and when this tissue is taken and put back. Well, taken out, preferably in your very young, before the age of 40, right? So for those of us above the age of 40, well...
Too late for us, Mira, sorry.
Doesn't matter. So we're discussing the ethical aspects of this, the risks involved. You've said, Dr. Helena, and there are risks involved. We don't know what will present later on, even if you thaw and implant it at the age of 50 and 60. And
get pregnant at the age of 60, bless you.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Well, some people wish to do so.
At 60?
No, well, because if you have a...
I'll need therapy if that happens.
if you imagine, earlier on you pointed out that we're all living longer and the youth are all enjoying their life, to get married and have children in much later on. Because our parents' generation do it in their 20s, we do it in our 30s, and later on people might do it in their 40s or 50s. Isn't that a possible scenario in the future, if this technology permits?
It is possible, but yet, do you really want to have a child at age of 60? Come on, get on with life, George!
That's what we say now, but the thing is that 20 years ago, 30 years ago, our parents would be baffled why would people have children in their 30s or late 30s or 40s.
Yeah, right? It's true. Times has changed. But really, does our body changes? I mean, do we become younger physically? And, when you get pregnant at the age of 60, will our body cope with it if you're 20 years from
age?
Because
at the moment... older mother getting pregnant is a high-risk pregnancy.
Absolutely.
Right? Would you like to explain to the listeners, what does that mean?
Yeah, if you're actually at the age of 40 or 35 and beyond, there is a slightly higher risk of high blood pressure, for example.
Uh-huh.
Okay, premature delivery, premature birth, or baby die inside the uterus, or gestational diabetes. So there is a whole spectrum of risk which is involved when you're pregnant with a baby at the age of, around the age of 40 or beyond. So really, it also come back to the question whether when you are pregnant at the age of 60, what is your risk for all these complications?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's not just the baby, it's the maternal risk and also the child's, the fetal risk.
Yeah, absolutely. So really, 60 is really pushing it too far.
It's brutal, really, isn't it?
It's really brutal. I want to be in a golf course, at the age of 60, enjoying my life, please.
But on the other hand, so if we don't preserve the fertility, but preserve that youth, is there anything wrong with that?
Nothing wrong. I can get a younger man, George. You know, I'm just joking, George.
No, you already have nature going against you as you get older when it comes to fertility. But then again, most of us, on top of that, most of us are not even healthy at this age. So that's going to... It's going to be double whammy if you're not healthy and, you know, we're all obese and we already have diabetes and hypertension at such a young age. We're already going into late pregnancy with so many risks. What happens, you know, when nature is against you as well? So we've got May who says, my God, I was just talking about to my husband about this morning, because should I, at the age of 56, remove my parts that cause heavy bleeding every month since many of my siblings are suffering from cancer?
Right.
Me, that's worrying, right? At the age of 56.
Especially when you know you have family history as well.
Yeah. In that scenario, I think it's actually better to actually see a gynecologist as soon as possible to make sure that we're not dealing with cancer. Of course, if you're dealing with cancer, then yes, the answer will be yes, please remove it.
Because at May's age, she should not be expecting any further bleeding.
Well, as I say, it's actually a spectrum.
Not on a monthly basis?
Not really. Some women does that. They go into menopause a bit later than the general population. But having said that, with family history as such and heavy bleeding, then it is actually two red flags that we need to deal with immediately.
Okay. So you've got a homemaker here. Interesting. You know, her husband's a doctor, but she's calling up because she doesn't trust him, I think. I'm only guessing.
That's a wife trusts you. I don't trust my husband.
No. Okay. What's the question?
So she says she's wondering, she reached puberty only at the age of 15, but was told by the GP with the many symptoms that she was going through at the age of 39, it was the onset of menopause. She said, I seem to have had all the symptoms that anyone had. My doctor husband didn't let me go on HRT because of the study you just talked about, but was on Remifemin for a couple of years.
Right.
I'm 62 now and in good health. No medication at all. Cholesterol a little bit on the high side. Any suggestions for this?
Well, it really have to depend on what is the extent of the so-called symptoms or discomfort, for example. Now, Remifemin is actually an alternative. It's actually from the... isoflurane, something to do with the plant estrogen.
It's natural.
It's natural estrogen. Well, it does actually relieve all the symptoms. Not to say all, some of the symptoms to a certain extent, but it doesn't completely take away the symptoms. Yeah. So really, we had to really assess this woman to see how disruptive is these symptoms are. I mean, if really is very disruptive, there may be a role to consider a short-term HRT, for example.
Okay.
But what types and how we administer is depends on individual as well.
Okay. Have your discussion with your husband first, Lily. That might be a good idea.
If you trust him.
not Lily. Sorry. Okay. Homemaker, that was homemaker.
Gosh, we're Lily, terrible, aren't we?
No. Doctors, you know, doctors I find are always overly cautious when it comes to your family members.
Or dismissive sometimes.
I know.
Gosh, yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah, moving on. So that was homemaker. Lily's asking, I've been wondering, but I haven't got a proper answer. I'm 27 years old. I'm a kidney patient, minimal change disease, and been on steroids for 20 over years. And although my menstruation cycle is very irregular, I was told that there is a likeliness of me having menopause earlier because of my long-term steroids intake. But can I ask, can both my kidney conditions and the steroids really make me have menopause earlier? I was advised to take hormone pills early, only if I really want to. Not sure if this would really help though.
No, I think there's actually one underlying issue, which is actually the kidney disease, whether her kidney function is actually properly restored to a certain extent with this treatment. Well, we tend to be very cautious with kidney patients, whether we should let them get pregnant or not, because, again, they are of high risk when they get pregnant.
Right.
If you actually your kidney function is actually not good, then you have a whole battery of problems associated with your pregnancy. You may lose your life, your kidney function might deteriorate and so forth. There's a whole battery. And of course, there is actually risk for the fetus and miscarriage, premature delivery and so forth and so forth. Yeah. And high blood pressure and all that. That's number one.
Yeah, you just highlighted that it's awfully complicated in order to take all the factors together prior to letting someone become pregnant, right?
Absolutely. So there is one. Now, number two, that if you're on long-term steroids, does it actually affect your fertility? Actually, the answer may not be true.
Ah.
Yeah. But having said that, we have to know what was the cause of her kidney disease. For example, if it's an autoimmune-related kidney disease, then the autoantibodies may actually cause the premature organ failure. So we really have to get into how, why she had kidney disease to start with.
So, like, you know, many men knows that exogenous supply of testosterone will kind of shrink your crown jewels.
Yes.
And then, and then that doesn't happen in women, that they get high dose or continuous doses of steroid that will not affect their ovarian functions.
Not necessarily. Depends on the dosage as well and the types of, you know, prednisolone and or, you know, other steroids. But having said that, George, I have a very nice question to ask
you. Okay, perfect.
Can we slice up part of testicles
testicle and freeze it?
Freeze it, yeah.
But where work? But hold on, where are we replanting?
Where are we implanting armpits? Definitely, because earlier on I felt very, very left out when you start talking about planting your armpits. So you can plant on my armpits anytime.
George,
On the more serious notes, right? Who will be the youngest individual you treat with HRT, and how long is the treatment of HRT can go on for?
Yeah, when we first started to have the WHI study and everybody panicked and so forth, and then later when we look in, we look into dissect the studies, and they seem to have think that if you have premature ovarian failure, for example, you menopaused earlier, for example, at the age of 40, and then you take HRT up to the age of 51, the risk shouldn't be increased because you are actually replacing the so-called hormones that you are lacking, for example.
Up to that point of
up
life.
Up to that point of life. So really, the question is, are you going to, you know, for example, a woman who comes to you at the age of 31, for example, and she doesn't have any ovarian tissue anymore, it's not functioning properly, she, for XYZ reason, she goes into premature menopause. And you have to really think about her long-term risk of osteoporosis, for example. Then it may be a place to consider hormone replacement therapy in her. Okay.
What's the youngest individual you have come across that had natural cause of premature menopause?
I have seen women as young as 32, 31, 32.
Wow.
Yeah. And
do you know why?
We don't know. We have actually screened their genes as well. We have screened their chromosome because there are women who actually carries a mosaicism for Turner syndrome, for example. Some part of their, you know, some parts of their body have cells which has only 45. Chromosomes rather than the 46 chromosomes that we have. So these women sometimes actually go into menopause earlier than the rest of the populations. Yeah. So we're screening them and we can't find them.
For women who benefit from the HRT treatment and regularly stringently monitor their side effects and cancer risk, how long can this go on for?
Well, the thing is, there's actually no, unfortunately, there's no definite answer to it because studies used to say that if you actually take it longer than 5 years, the risk actually increased dramatically. So really, after
because
5 years...
Because it's a bit cruel, right? I mean, you give just, someone that's fountain of youth, 5 years later,
you
say, studies says that you have to take it away.
Yeah, that's right. Take it away. That's right. So sad.
So, I mean, Dr. Perlmutter used to say, go on forever, you know, because that is what we deserve, right? Okay. However, in your experience, what's the longest duration of treatment you have given women the benefit of HRT?
Now, I tend to be really, really kiasi. Okay, after 5 years, conservative. So, after 5 years, then you'll be sitting there saying,
"It's about time."
It's about time.
This.
So maybe they go somewhere else. They go to see Perlmutter after that.
So, don't ring in Perlmutter.
Yeah. There's not enough time. We'd love to hear from Dr. Perlmutter, though, however.
I'm sure 100%.
Yes. So, your message on menopause to women, Dr. Helena, when they come and see you, I'm sure you understand what they're going through. How do you, what's your message to them?
Well, the thing is, the menopause thing is something, to us, is something very important. It's another phase of your life. Something like having your first menses, so you reach a menopause, it's a milestone. Now, how you're going to cope with it is actually very individualized. And, well, I wouldn't encourage everybody to jump into the bandwagon of having, you know, HRT or, you know, having your ovarian tissue preserved. But I think everyone should consider, because not everything is suitable for everyone. You can't actually apply the Bangkok rule. But of course, if you're really having a lot of issue physically and mentally with menopausal symptoms, it's not, you know, it's not a death sentence. You can still consider HRT because it's not all that bad. There are many options available nowadays, and I certainly look forward to new studies and new methods of regaining our fountains of youth. Yeah, with HRT, for example.
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to the outcome. Well, I probably might be 80 or 90 years old to this cryotherapy and how, you know, these ladies are going to, whether or not they will be able
to delay
their menopause.
In fact,
or not.
To be honest with you, I quite like the way you say that, because my last word is that, mark my words, in 20 or 30 years' time, I think this piece of research is perhaps going to be the game changer in order to change the whole natural or relive the natural productions of sex hormone.
I really think so as well, yeah. Dr. Helena. You look so skeptical.
I'll put my money in stem cells.
Okay.
All right, let's see what happens.
And the only thing that I need to do is just make more rooms in my armpit.
George, thank you both for joining me. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Dr. Helena Lim, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, on this discussion on trying to delay menopause on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.